Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new things every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. I almost forgot it for a second. I almost forgot the opening jingle as I have been down in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina for the last few days. It was a good time. Learned a lot about the area, maybe some things I'd do differently if I were to vacation there again. I can see why people call it the Dirty Myrtle as well. Some greasy people down there. Certainly made some memories, certainly did some heinous activities, but now we're back and we're ready to record. And, you know, most episodes, we mix in multiple different things. Before today, it is as simple as it gets. New UFC fights that we have to discuss. We're going to be recapping UFC 313, and we're going to be dropping our UFC Vegas 104 predictions live on today's episode. Beating the buzzer, recording this Thursday night. I was doing a lot of flying today, honestly, a lot of turbulence on the flight from South Carolina to Baltimore and then from Baltimore to Minneapolis. I was not rocking with it. Okay, I'm not a big plane guy, not super into flying, but I got to do what you got to do to see the world. I can only imagine what's going to be like when I go overseas later on. But we'll have to see. But yeah, we went 7-3 on UFC 313, 4 predictions, bringing our yearly total to 64-31, which I think is pretty dang good. We're going to look to up that total with our UFC Vegas 104 predictions, which we'll be giving you later on today's episode. But let's get into it. Of course, we start every episode with it. I wasn't even going to do it for this episode, but I figured, yeah, we got it. It's kind of tradition, new UFC news. So new UFC news, new UFC fights. We got a fight rebooked here. UFC Vegas 106 in Las Vegas, May 17th. Curtis Razorblades has been rebooked against Rizwan Kunia for the third freaking time. They're supposed to fight on UFC 313, and Curtis Blades pulled out with an illness. I'm pretty sure the day of, it was, oh man, it was so depressing. I just want to see these two fight, and if they fight and it's boring, it's just going to be a waste of our time. But they're going to be going down May 17th. It's not the main event. I don't know what the Apex main event is going to be May 17th, but whatever it is going to be better than this fight. So this will probably be the co-main event or something. I love it. Some other crazy fight news for UFC Des Moines, May 3rd. Jeremy Stephens, that is right, the 39-year-old Jeremy Stephens, will be returning to the UFC after a three-year hiatus, might even be 4 years at this point, to take on Mason Jones, who also returns to the UFC. Jeremy Stephens, of course, wins over Rafael dos Anjos, Henan Barao, and the currently one of the best knockout artists on the roster, Josh Emmett. As for Mason Jones, you know, he holds a win over David Onama. And anyone who's seen David Onama fight knows how tough he is. And Mason Jones whooped him, which is crazy to think. Mason's gone 15-2. Both has lost his decisions in the UFC to tough competition. As for his time in Cage Warriors, I mean, he's an absolute legend. We know how good this man is. Jeremy Stephens returning after some bare-knuckle matchups. They take on Eddie Alvarez or somebody taking on Chad Mendes. I don't know, but he's back in the UFC. I believe he's from the Des Moines area. I believe he's from Iowa. So they figured they'd give him one proper send-off. Will he win this? I don't know. Never count out Jeremy Stephens, also known as the Who the F Is This Guy from Conor McGregor. The big news, though, this will be the final really big news I give you guys of the final four fights that we have announced, but UFC Des Moines also has the number 13th ranked middleweight Rainer De Ridder, RDR, taking on the 7-0 undefeated 4-0 in the UFC, Bo Nickel. That's right. You know, they for some reason think this is a favorable matchup to Bo Nickel. Now, I'll say these two are about as even as it gets. The main discrepancy here is Rainer De Ridder 19-2, 2-0 in the UFC. Bo Nickel 7-0, 4-0 in the UFC. So Bo coming off a win over Paul Craig where nothing happened. I guess he showed his technicality and patience, but certainly wasn't as fast-paced as his Daniel Quintero series matchups, his Val Woodburn knockout, his Jamie Pickett submission, nothing like that. Kind of had a lackluster 2024. I mean, he submitted Cody Brundage on UFC 300. Kind of, you know, we know Cody Brundage's skill level, so that wasn't overly impressive. As for Rainer De Ridder, debuts, has a crazy fight with Gerald Meerschaert, just two gassed old dudes going at it, and then manhandles Kevin Holland and submits him in round number one, making Kevin Holland look absolutely silly. Hails from the Netherlands. He was a double champion in one championship, whatever you want. He was a double champ in one championship. It's weird to explain. One championship is basically Asia's UFC, if you will. And he's good. He's talented. I don't know who I'm going to pick for this, if I'm being honest, because I know how good Rainer De Ridder is, but they want Bo Nickel to win so bad. I will say the one thing, though, is undefeated fighters are dropping like flies this year. Just something to keep on the docket. For that UFC Vegas 106 card, joining Curtis Blaydes and Rizwan Kuniyev is Luiana Santos in the women's bantamweight division, taking on Tanera Lisboa. Tanera Lisboa and Luiana Santos, two Brazilian women, and, you know, they could really use some depth to the women's bantamweight division. Luiana 3-1 in the UFC, Tanera 2-0. I think the winner of this could easily be getting a top 15 opponent, as there's really no one in that division that strikes me as entertaining besides maybe Kayla Harrison, and we'll have to see. Here's one for UFC Kansas City going down April 26th in the men's lightweight division. Ahmed Hassanzadeh will be stepping in to replace Rich Ramirez and taking on Evan Elder. Evan Elder, 2-2 in the UFC. Dude's been an absolute warrior, leaving all his matchups with some battle scars. Nasser Ahmed, 12-3, making his debut. I'll be curious to see how he performs. And the final fight news to let you all know for UFC London, Molly McCann has a new opponent after Thanera, whoever she was supposed to. Stella Nunes pulled out. Apologies. Stella Nunes pulls out and in is stepping the 11-1, making her short notice debut, Alexa Thanera. She is from Brazil. And that's all we know. 11-1. That's all we got about her. Got an interesting hairdo. I'll say that. She's kind of got a funky hairdo, which I kind of rock with. Molly McCann's got to be the biggest hit or miss fighter. 14-7 professionally, 7-6 in the UFC. I've never seen someone go from three straight great wins, including two back-to-back spinning knockouts, parading around the UFC championship in the ring, and then all of a sudden she's getting fished by Aaron Blanchfield, and she's getting submitted by Julia Ostroyalenko, and is just at the bottom of her career. So we'll see if Molly McCann can rebound. She's 34 years old, turns 35 May 4th. No, no, still time to turn around. But that's been all the major UFC news you guys need to be aware of. I'll say some of the major things to keep on your radar is Itopira fight news coming at you this summer. So it should be exciting. Lots of good stuff to come. The UFC always dropping new news left, right, and center. Now, another event that I had mentioned went down, of course, this past weekend, which has almost been a full week now. That's right, UFC 313 happened. It came and it went, and it was interesting. It was interesting, to say the least. Some surprises, some shockers. Let's take a quick look here at it. So, like I said, 7-3 on predictions. Didn't start the night off good at all. Predicting the first fight of the night wrong always gets me kind of in a sour mood. But after that, we kind of started cooking. I mean, 4-1 on the prelims. 2-3 main card isn't ideal, or 3-2, actually. And we predicted the main event, co-main event. So actually, it was a pretty good night, pickums-wise. But we kick things off, middleweight division, and we start off with a robbery. That is right. Ozzie Diaz beats DeJordan Santos by unanimous decision. Everyone's calling this a robbery. Everyone's saying that DeJordan got robbed. Now, we should have known from the get-go. I mean, he wasn't the best on Dana White's Contender Series. And Ozzie Diaz, I mean, has not amounted to much in terms of UFC stature. Back-to-back losses to Joe Pyfer and Zhang Mingyang getting knocked out. I mean, the Zhang Mingyang one in November was atrocious, but as far as this one goes, 135 even strikes for Ozzie, 131 for DeJordan, one takedown for Santos. Round one, DeJordan outstruck him. Round two, DeJordan got outstruck by two to Ozzie, but it looked more like he had won that. And then round three, he landed a takedown, but Ozzie landed much more. So I think everyone kind of agreed it was 2-1 for DeJordan. It goes unanimous decision, and Ozzie gets the win. You know, it snaps a losing streak for him. He's 10-3 now. I'm going to be honest, it's not going to lead anywhere. It's not going to lead anywhere in terms of UFC rankings or anything like that, especially in the men's middleweight division. But he picks it up. It's a terrible split decision. And the reason it's forgotten is because the next fight was an even worse split decision, as Myron Santos beats Francis Marshall. Now, I picked Myron, so I wasn't mad at all. I was kind of mad that DeJordan lost the bad decision. But for Myron, I kind of got the vibe they're going to give it to him. I mean, this one, it was 58 cinnamon strikes for Myron, 39 for Francis, 3-5 on takedowns for Francis Marshall. It was takedowns versus striking. And rounds 1, 2, 3, Myron outstrikes him all those rounds. Now, round 2 and 3, you see more takedowns from Francis. And Francis's best rounds, you know, he had a good round 1 on the feet and a good round 3. But it was pretty much probably 1-1 or 2-1 in favor of, or 2-0 in favor of Myron heading into round 3, or it might have been for Francis. I don't really know, but nonetheless, it goes to judges' scorecards, 30-27, 29-28, and 29-28. I always find those scorecards interesting when you have two judges scoring at 2-1, and then Derek Cleary, he's out here scoring every round for Francis Marshall. I don't know. Tough stuff. But Myron Santos, 16-1, keeps the win streak alive. And hey, 2-0 now in the UFC. As for Francis, I mean, he's gone, what is it, 2-3 in the UFC, back-to-back split decisions. It's he's average. Not as average as they come. For the men's featherweight division, you know, Myron, I don't know if he's going to get anyone of stature, really, for his next matchup. There's always your, you know, if Mason Jones beats Jeremy Stephens, we mentioned that earlier, Mason versus Myron could be a good matchup. You could even give him a Hakeem Dawodow, someone like that. I don't know, but Myron gets a bad decision. It was pretty awkward. Following that, though, we got back to it with Carlos Leal taking on Alex Morono, and Carlos Leal just finally showing that PFL, that Bellator, that intensity that we knew was in him. He TKOs Alex Morono with, I think it was just under 45 seconds left in round number one, 79 significant strikes to 40. 81 total strikes, 41, all on the feet. Carlos was letting it go. I mean, that boxing, almost every punch was landing on Alex Morono. It was a standing TKO. I mean, props to Alex. Ate all those punches, never went down, but it was getting bad. It was getting bad, and Keith Pearson, known for some bad stoppages, this one, it was long overdue. He could have stopped it a bit earlier, but Carlos Leal, excellent work. And we should have known when he took Renat Fakhretdinov to a close decision where everyone's kind of like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I didn't actually think Renat won. We should have known that something was up, but Carlos Leal, great work, man. Props to him. Feeling great for him. For Alex Morono, this is 3 straight losses. He's 1-4 in his last 5. You could even go that he's 2-6 in his last 8. It's been tough going for Alex Morono. I'm sure they'll keep him around for some pick-me-up fight, but it's tough to say where he's going to wind up from here. As for Carlos, I mean, I have to say we give him a good veteran fight. How about a little Randy Brown? I think you got Santiago Ponzinibbio coming up. Muslim Salikov might have a fight or something. I like what I've seen from Carlos Leal, and I think he could even make a little rankings run. I don't know. I don't know. You never know what's going to happen in the rankings. I mean, let's put him up against a Vicente Luque, Wonderboy Thompson, Colby Covington, and I think he could give us a competitive fight. For Alex, probably against a hungry up-and-comer, there's tons of them out there. You know, decent fight there. Shocker in the next one as Bruno Fajera getting a submission win over Armin Petrosian. Shocking form. Might I say Armin Petrosian might be the most unlucky UFC fighter in all these fights he keeps having. It's just embarrassing for him. Round one and round two, you know, Armin's outstriking him 46-27, significantly on the feet. I mean, completely going in his favor. Bruno starts leaning on some takedowns round one, but drops round one. Loses round one to Armin, and kind of in, you know, round two, his coaches, like, on the stool were kind of like, hey, land the takedown. You can land this. Starts going for the takedowns. Eventually, Armin lines up on his back, but gets reversed. Then Bruno's on his back, locks up an armbar from bottom guard. It was kind of looking like a triangle choke turned into an armbar. Just beautiful work. Beautiful work for Bruno Fajera. He will improve to 13-2. And I mean, dude's been nonstop action. All of his fights so far in the UFC have been finishes. All of his 15 career fights, all of them have ended before the final bell. Bruno Fajera, welcome to the men's middleweight division again. Now, I can't really give him a ranked opponent, but loser of Rainer Day Ritter and Bo Nickel could be a super fun fight. I think Michelle Pereira may have a fight coming up with Roman Kopilov. The loser of that could be a fight for Bruno Fajera. I love this guy. I want to see him back in the octagon. For Armin Petrosian, this is now 3 straight losses. Arm triangled by Rodolfo Vieira. Spinning back fist, double spinning back fisted by Shahram Magomedov. Now submitted by a knockout artist. I'm thinking his days are numbered. I think they might cut Armin Petrosian or they're going to feed him to someone. You know what? Ozzy Diaz versus Armin Petrosian. A little pick-me-up fight for him. Just interesting stuff all around. But hey, good stuff here, and we predicted it correctly. Final prelim of the night, men's flyweight division. How is Joshua Van not in the rankings? That's my main question, dude. Somehow he survived Rey Tassoura. Rey Tassoura, 10-0 coming in, 22 years old. I knew he was good, but I just knew Joshua Van was better. I mean, significant strikes, 59-32 in favor of Joshua Van. Total strikes, 127-47. Is that not insane? Takedowns, 4 of 21 for only 3 minutes, 49 seconds of control time. Joshua Van was on a lock this matchup. Defended 4 in round 1, defended 8 in round 2, and defended 5 in round 3 against the 30-27. I mean, Rey Tassoura, his only game plan was to land takedowns, and Josh was doing a great job stuffing. I was caught off guard at how good he was doing, and it was phenomenal to see. And now, three straight decision wins. He's looked good in all of them, 13-2. Mind you, he's 6-1 in the UFC, his only loss an upset in round the third round in his fight against Charles Johnson. We got to give him a ranked opponent. Got to give him a ranked opponent, and there's tons of options. You got rebooking the Bruno Silva match. You got Tim Elliott, Ultimate Gatekeeper. You got Asuel Mabayev, who just lost. You could book that. You also have Alex Perez. There are so many options for Joshua Van, and I'm picking him against pretty much all of these guys. You know, I think Ramazan Temeriyev might give him a tough time. I think Kai Sakura might be too high level, but there's just other guys in there. I mean, I could see him beating Tatsuo Taero. Okay, I'm really high on Joshua Van. Love to see it. For Ray, I mean, it's tough. It's tough. You're undefeated. Then you lose a fight to Joshua Van. But it just kind of showed he has a kind of a one-style game plan coming into these fights. And at the end of the day, that's not going to win you the big fights, is these just one-style matchups. So Charles Johnson just lost. I think that could be another pick-me-up fight. Charles Johnson thrives in those. And it would really show, hey, can Ray hang around? And is Charles as good as people are saying he is? I don't know. We'll have to see. But the action was just getting going as we kicked off the main card with the current knockout of the year. That's right. Every other knockout can step aside as Mauricio Ruffi lands a spinning wheel kick on Bobby Green. Walk-off knockout. I mean, come on. Earns the first of two 50K performance bonuses. I mean, Mauricio Ruffi. Insane. He's not in the rankings. Okay, he didn't get in the rankings with this one. They didn't put him in the rankings, unfortunately, because Ignacio won. But listen to these names of people he's going to be getting next. Grant Dawson at number 14. Benoit Saint-Denis at 12. Rafael Fiziev at 11. Dare I even say Benil Dariush at 9? I doubt that, but I don't know. Mauricio Ruffi is an absolute star. 7 straight wins now, 12-1 in the UFC. He's got 2 crazy knockouts in round 1. And the Fighting Nerds is the best, is the highlight reel gym right now. They are taking the UFC by storm. And these guys probably get an Apex main event up next. I mean, him versus Matheus Gamrot, him versus Rafael Fiziev, I want to see it. For Bobby Green, I mean, I don't want him to retire. I love Bobby Green, but I mean, it's been rough. It's been rough. 1-3 in your last 4. I mean, you could say 3-3 in his last 6, but dude has just been knocked out by Jalen Turner, submitted by Paddy Pimblett, now knocked out in this state. It's getting rough for Bobby Green. So unless you're going to give him a legacy fight, I mean, I don't really know what you're going to do with him. I don't know what legacy fights you could give him. I'm sure there's lightweights out there for him. I'm trying to think of some veteran lightweights that he could potentially take on. No one really in the rankings, if I'm being honest. I can't even spitball anyone. They're out there, though. They're out there. You know, Chase Hooper is taking on Jim Miller. If Chase Hooper gets past Jim, I think you could do Bobby Green versus Chase Hooper. I mean, but he's always been, Bobby Green's always been the kind of the gatekeeper. Now, I can't lie, a lot of people get past him as a gatekeeper. But Mauricio Ruffi, I think he's getting a big fight next, and the night belongs to him. I mean, he had the best finish of the entire card. It was phenomenal. Following that, I mean, I think we all knew this would be a momentum killer. It was. I barely even watched this. You know, I watched a lot of these, and for this, I was literally just checking my phone at times. It was atrocious, and I'm very confused how Yasmin Lucindo even climbed to the number 7 spot in the rankings. At one point, she got dropped down to number 8 with this loss, but number 5 ranked Amanda Lemos wins this one handsomely, 29-28 across the scoreboard, 12 significant strikes to 4 in favor of Amanda Lemos, 30 total strikes to 40 in favor of Yasmin Lucindo, 3 of 5 on takedowns for Amanda Lemos, 8 minutes of control time. Yasmin Lucindo, 1 of 1, 4 minutes of control time. So Amanda Lemos goes on the attack early, wins round 1. I mean, Yasmin doesn't even land a significant strike. Round 2, Yasmin, yet again, taken down, doesn't land a significant strike. Round 3, she finally lands her own takedown, wins round 3. I mean, this was just a lose-lose. Lose-lose for both of these ladies. Don't get me wrong, Amanda Lemos back in the win category. For Yasmin, this snaps her 4-fight winning streak, which hurts, but this moves the needle for no one. I mean, you could call this a draw in my eyes. I'll say that Yasmin Lucindo, she's going to be fighting down. You know, your Jillian Robertsons, your Angela Hill. I really like an Angela Hill matchup there. Luyana Pinero, she could even get a fight up here or something. I mean, I don't know what to do with her, but she's going to be fighting down. For Amanda Lemos, I mean, she's fought in the number 6 girl, fought in the number 4, fought in the number 3. The only person she hasn't fought in is the number 2 ranked Tatiana Suarez. So unless Tatiana is going to retire, we can do that fight. If not, I think Amanda Lemos is someone where you find almost a Kayla Harrison a Rainer Day Ritter, a Kai Sakura, you know, Rizvan Kunia, for example, who's getting a top five opponent right off the bat, dare I say even championship opportunities, and you give someone like that to Amanda Lemos. I don't know any women in the world like that. Personally, I don't know any prospects, but that could be an option. This killed the entire momentum of the card, but thankfully, the next fight picked it back up as Ignacio Bahamadez. I was sleeping on him. I'll admit, I slept on him. I slept on him hard, and he went from unranked to the number 15th ranked lightweight in the world. Props to Ignacio. Props to him. Great to see a round one triangle choke. 30 seconds in. Are you freaking kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me, Ignacio? His second career submission and just showing the versatility. Showing the versatility, earning himself a 50K performance bonus. I mean, the opportunity just presented itself. I don't even know how Jalen kind of had him up against the fence, and he came down. Ignacio just locked it up right away, and he was forced to tap. No, nothing to do for Jalen. Had to tap, and that's it for Jalen Turner. 29 years old, retires after this fight. And I mean, I understand you're 14-9. You've gone 1-4 in your last few fights, but mind you, split decision losses to Matheus Gamrot and Dan Hooker, which could have gone either way. The Moicano loss is going to hurt him, and as for this Ignacio one, this was probably the only real bad loss I'd call him on here, where it was actually, he didn't mess up or anything. It was just Ignacio on at 100%. Ignacio, 17-5, three-fight win streak, all 50K performance bonuses, all round-one finishes. It's phenomenal. Mind you, you can even say in his UFC tenure, he is 6-2, both his losses, close decisions. So, welcome back into the relevancy world, Ignacio. I mean, this guy is a finishing machine. I love to see it, and I think he's at like an 88% finish rate or something. It's ridiculous. So, Jalen has retired. I hate to see it. There really isn't anything for me to give him anyway, so we'll keep him retired. As for Ignacio, you know, it's pretty similar to Mauricio Ruffy. You know, you got Grant Dawson right above him. Benoit Saint-Denis and Joel Alvarez are going to battle. You got Rafael Fiziev. You're going to have the loser of Michael Chandler and Paddy Pimblett. You got Money Moicano. There are so many options for Ignacio. If I had to pick one opponent, I would say you do Ignacio versus, I'll do Ignacio versus Rafael Fiziev, and I'll throw Mauricio Ruffy to like Grant Dawson or someone like that. But great work for Bahamadez, kept the momentum rolling, and it's exactly what we needed after the snooze fest that was Lemos versus Lucindo. Following that, co-main event, and if you'd have predicted that this was fight of the night, I don't think it would have surprised anyone. Justin Gaethje beats Rafael Fiziev 29-28 across the scoreboard in another fight of the night. Is it fight of the year? No. No, my current fight of the year is still Umar versus Merab, with a close second, Cody Steele versus Rong Zhu. All right, but this one up there, was it as good as their first one? It's debatable. I think they both serve their own purposes. Rafael Fiziev remains at 11. Justin Gaethje remains at 3 in terms of rankings, but this is really what this fight symbolized. So, totals from the fight, 1 knockdown for Justin Gaethje, 72 cinnamon strikes, 68 in favor of him, 98 total strikes, 81 in favor of him. Gaethje goes 0-3 on takedowns, gets a minute and a half of control time. Fiziev, 2-2 on takedowns, 40 seconds of control time. And that's how round one started, is these two were kind of feeling each other out striking, and then Fiziev shoots a takedown and lands it, and you're kind of like, oh, that caught him off guard. Fiziev takes round one, and you're kind of like, oh my gosh, is he going to grapple his way to victory? Round two, the Justin Gaethje uppercut clips Fiziev again, and props to Fiziev. He ate that, gets knocked down, survives the follow-up, and is able to make it to round three. It was great to see. And then round three, you get a classic stand-up fight between both of these guys. 39 cinnamon strikes to 30. Gaethje gets it done. I mean, dude is a absolute legend. Absolute legend. It is great to see. Great to see for Gaethje, and he's in the latter stages of his career. I know people are talking about title fights and stuff. I don't know. I mean, let's look at this guy's losses since 2020. I mean, Khabib Nurmagomedov title shot, Charles Oliveira title shot, Max Holloway BMF belt, Max Holloway champion in his own right. So Gaethje has beaten everyone else that they've thrown at him that hasn't been in a title fight. I think Islam would do him worse than the other two, and Khabib and Oliveira. So I don't necessarily know if I want to see that, but if it's true that Charles Oliveira has a fight being booked with Max Holloway, or unless they're doing Armin versus Charles, this doesn't sound like they want to do Gaethje versus Poirier as Poirier's retirement fight. I don't know what they're going to do for Poirier. To be honest, you could do Poirier Max Holloway maybe, but I don't know what they're going to do for Poirier. I would love a Dan Hooker fight. I think that would be a great way to go out. That would be bloody. That would be fantastic. But in terms of Justin Gaethje, it's probably either going to be an Armin Tsarukyan number one contender fight, or they might legit just straight up give him a title shot, because there really is anyone else, you know? It's weird that the number five guy, Max Holloway, knocked him out, and Gaethje's ranked above him, but looking at where they're now in their careers, it's weird to think that that MMA math kind of works. I don't know. Gaethje, he's going to retire as a top three guy, top five guy in the world, and you got to remember, this guy's been in the top five since, you could even say top three, since 2019 or something. Justin Gaethje's timeless, and this was a great fight. Great fight between these two, and it had me on the edge of my seat. Now, we get to the main event. Now, people are going to say this was boring, they didn't like this, but as someone who picked Magomed Ankalaev, this was very entertaining to see. I mean, come on, guys. I knew Magomed was the one to beat Alex Bowa-Dambera. I told you guys, he was a journeyman. It was meant to happen. And people who watch this are going to say, I think Alex Barrow won. You know, there's a 49-46 scorecard out there for Magomed Ankalaev, and I agree with that. The 48-47s, 48-47s, I also agree with that. Tail of the fight, here's your totals. 94 submission strikes to 76, 127 total strikes to 97. Magomed goes 0 of 12 on takedowns. So 12 takedowns defended for Alex Pereira is great. Alex actually attempted a takedown of his own comedically. 5 minutes, 42 seconds control time for Magomed Ankalaev. Round 1. Alex outstrikes him by 7. There was a failed takedown attempt from Magomed. This was close. I can see the Pereira. I can see give it to Pereira. I think this is the round everyone gave it to Alex Pereira. Even for me who picked Magomed, I agreed Pereira won this. It was just close. It was close. Round 2, it wasn't close. Magomed actually almost knocked out Alex Pereira. The bell saved Pereira at the end of round 2, and it was shocking to see. It's shocking to see Alex Pereira on his heels, especially with Magomed clipping him and landing. And that's some of the whole tale of the whole fight. Alex Pereira was pressured the whole fight. Alex Pereira almost never, I'd say out of the 25 minutes, maybe 1 minute of the whole fight, he was the one pressuring Magomed. This was Magomed pushing the pace the entire fight. Round 3, it was close. 21 submission strikes for Alex, 17 for Magomed. I thought Magomed won this, but if you want to give it to Pereira, I completely agree. This was another close round. Now, round 4, Magomed won. 19 submission strikes to 7, 3 minutes and 50 seconds of control time up against the clinch, which isn't entertaining, but are you going to be mad at Magomed for holding him against that, or the fact that the number 3 pound-for-pound fighter on the planet can't get out of that clinch? I think that spoke more waves to me than anything. And then round 5, 20 submission strikes of 14. Magomed landed more, held him in the clinch. It did what he had to do. And you can only reward so many takedown attempts for Alex Pereira, especially when, you know, he'll defend it and then Magomed will still be on him, pushing the pressure, pushing the pace. I love to see it. I love to see it from Magomed. The win streak is now at, I think, 12, maybe 13. Undefeated streaks at 14 or something. It's a phenomenal run for Magomed Ankalaev. As for Alex Pereira, this snaps his win streak, this snaps his momentum, and it was a tough defeat. It was a really tough defeat. I mean, I don't know where he goes from here, to be honest. You know, Magomed right now, he's your light heavyweight champion. Alex Pereira is now going to be ranked number 1. As for pound, Magomed is number 6. Alex Pereira is down to number 8. It's I don't know. I don't know what to do with Alex Pereira. You know, there's rumors they're going to book a rematch. I don't like rematches. I'm honestly so sick of rematches. I don't want to see rematches even when it was fight of the year. Okay. But if you're going to do that next, they're going to do it in Brazil. They're going to try and get Alex Pereira the belt back. But if you're me, I mean, look at what happened last time he lost to Adesanya in a championship fight. He moved up, took him 2 fights. He was the champion. All right, and heavyweight is in desperate need of something. So Alex Pereira isn't going to walk into a Tom Aspinall, John Jones fight. All right, but what he can do is take on Ciryl Gane. What he can do is take on Alexander Volkov, take on Sergey Pavlovich, take on the number 2, 3, or 4 guy in the world. Personally, love the Alexander Volkov or Ciryl Gane matchups. I think he has a great chance in both of those 2 strikers. I also do think that if Magomed is doing that to him, what are some of the big boys going to do to him? But there's also words he might go to boxing and fight Alexander Usyk. Alex Pereira, guaranteed Hall of Famer. His run was legendary for 2 years. I just think it's been a change in the guard. In terms of other potential opponents, Jiří is always going to be 1 win away. That's just how he is. You also got Jan Blachowicz and Carlos Ubert coming up. The winner of that, I would love to see get a title shot. All right, I would absolutely love to see that. but especially these international fights, Jan Blachowicz, Jiří Procházka against Magomed, you can do it anywhere in Europe and it'll be a hit. I absolutely loved it. So, UFC 313, you know, not the best main event, not the best overall, but it was better than 312. All right, it wasn't better than 311, was better than 312 in terms of title fights. I think that UFC 311 still produced the best, but UFC 313, an upgrade to an extent from UFC 312. You know, we'll leave it in the past. We'll accept that it happened. We look forward to UFC 314. I think that's going to be card of the year right now. I'm excited for that one. But we have bigger issues at hand, ladies and gentlemen. That's UFC Vegas 104. Can't believe they're still at the Apex. But at the same time, I couldn't picture giving a crowd this card. There's some hidden gems on here, but Marvin Vettori versus Roma Dolidze, it is about as apex of an apex card as you can get. So we got a plethora of fights. We've got like 13 or 14 fights here. We got a lot to go through. Took a bunch of notes, went through them all, and we're going to give our predictions live on the podcast. That's right. I make none of my predictions before the podcast. Obviously, I have in my mind who I'm going to pick for a couple of these, but for a lot of these, I look at the stats, I look at the all, I look at the odds, and we choose live on here. So from the first prelim to the main event bell, let's make our predictions. Kicking off the card, we head to the women's flyweight division as Eunice Dubin makes her UFC debut as she takes on Carly Crispy Judice. Eunice 6-0 with one no contest. Carly 3-2. Interesting. 5'7-5'4. Carly has 3 inches in height, 3 inches in reach as well. 68-65 southpaw with that left for Carly. Orthodox with the right for Eunice Dubin. Eunice is coming in this one plus 380. Carly Judice is the favorite at minus 500. Interestingly enough, Eunice Dubin will start with her 28 years old from Venezuela, but now trains in Pittsburgh. Over 6 wins, 6 finishes, 5 knockouts, and 1 sub. She's actually won her last 3 fights in round number 1. Was on Dana White's Contender Series episode 4 this past season in September, where she got a 1:13 knockout of Shannon Clark, and now she's making her debut. She's got momentum. I'm almost confused why she's such a big favorite. It's making me want to sprinkle a little money on her for some reason, but she's young, she's hungry, and she's making her short-nosed debut against Carly Crispy Judice. Carly, 26 years old from Louisiana, was supposed to fight Juliana Miller. Of course, Juliana Miller won the Ultimate Fighter, what was that, 3 seasons ago or something? Tough luck, but now she's stepping in here. Oh, actually, she was supposed to fight February 15th. Oh, so this is actually an official matchup. Good to hear. Carly lost on Dana's Contender Series, but was so good they gave her a contract. She then debuted in June of 2024 and lost a split decision fight of the night to Gabriela Fernandez. So Carly Judice, a boxer, she's very notable. I think she might have been doing like Taekwondo or something. I don't know, but Carly Judice, very entertaining, has unfortunately lost 2 close split decisions. I don't know. There's something about Eunice Dubin debuting, and I was a little high on her before I read that Carly Judice has lost 2 split decisions that were fight of the night, and that's fight of the night. She landed 169 significant strikes, including 79 in round 3. Wow. I'm almost confused how Gabriela won this. I don't really remember this. This was at Perez versus Tierra. That was a card I might have missed, but I don't know. I hate these ones, guys. I'm going to be honest. This is what happens when we make our predictions live on the podcast. I'm not prepared. So, Eunice Dubin, she's plus 380 for a reason. And she has a height discrepancy, discrepancy in reach. And Carly, she's lost close fights. But, we have a lot of close women's fights on here. I don't know if this is the one I can necessarily go and pick someone like Carly Judice. She'd lose a fight of the night. You know what? I'm sticking with my gut for this one, guys. Eunice Dubin, plus 380 dog, making her debut. She's riding that 100% win streak into the UFC. Give me Eunice Dubin with a shocking round 1 knockout. I love to deliver it. Moving up in the women's division, women's bantamweight action as Josie Nunez takes on Priscilla Zombie Girl Cachoeira. Oh, what a nickname that is. Josie Nunez 10-3, Priscilla 12-6, 5'7-5'2. Priscilla is 5 inches in height, but the reach goes to Josie, 67-65. Southpaw at the left for Nunez and orthodox with the right for Priscilla Cachoeira. Josiane minus 205, Priscilla plus 170. Love to see it. Alrighty, Josiane Nunez. Here is some interesting. Did you know she's in EA Sports UFC 5? Did you know that? Because if you didn't know that, well, now you know that she's in the game for no freaking reason. 31 years old from Brazil, 7 knockouts of her 10 wins, and she's never been finished in all 3 of her losses. As of late, 2024, 0-2, decision loss to Chelsea Chandler, and a split decision loss to Jacqueline Cavalcante. Nothing to be desired in either of those. She had a nice knockout in her debut back in 2021, but since then, 2 lackluster decision wins, 2 lackluster losses. Jose Nunes has left little to be desired, yet for some reason is in EA Sports UFC 5. Not even in the women's bantamweight rankings, but she's in the video game. You know who's actually not in the video game? Let me actually go over. Roman Kopilov is not in the game. He's ranked number 15. Rainer Dayritter at 13 is not in the game. You actually have Charles Johnson, number 15. Ramzan Temeriyev, number 13. Any high-level fighters that I can point out? Just to point out, Yusuf Zalal ranked number 12. He's not in the video game. You also have, who's another good one? There's got to be a good one I could use for an example. I guess maybe not. I guess they do got a lot of good fighters, but for Jose Nunes to be in the rankings, utterly ridiculous. Her opponent, Priscilla Cachoeira, the underdog, 36 years old from Brazil, 7 knockouts as well of her 12 victories, but of her 6 losses, she has been submitted 4 times. Last 2 times out, brutally finished. I mean, Miranda Maverick and Jasmine Jastavicius ran through her. It has been over a year since she last fought, when Jasmine Jastavicius actually murdered her, landed 303 total strikes, leading to a round 3 TKO. It was brutal. UFC career has not really gone ideal for her. 4-6, and she's been finished in half of those. Half of her losses, but all of her wins have been pretty entertaining. Knockouts, fight of the nights against Jeon Kim, how random. It's just been hit or miss with a lot of the fights you see with Priscilla Cachoeira. Tough losses. I mean, you have to debut against Valentina Shevchenko, then drop one to Molly McCann, drop a decision to Luia Carolina, drop one to Jillian Robertson. I absolutely love fights like this because they, you know, they're counting Priscilla out. She's the underdog, and this is a close woman's fight, and how awesome would it be if we open the night off with multiple underdogs winning? Jose Nunes is 5'2". I've just seen nothing but 4 straight, terribly boring decisions. Give me Priscilla Cachoeira to get a little, I don't even know, 7 knockouts, so she doesn't really do much. Oh, she doesn't really do much grappling. But you know what? Round 1 knockout for Priscilla Cachoeira. Maybe she'll catch Josiane Nunes with a hook or something and lights out from there. After those 2, hopefully not snooze fest, but I would expect nothing less, we're back in the men's division. Flyweight action as Daniel Berez takes on Andre Mascote Lima. I'm actually a little excited to see Andre Lima back in action. Daniel Berez, 17-6. He's coming in as the +245 underdog at -310. Andre Lima, 10-0 undefeated, is the favorite. 5'7 to 5'6. Andre's got an inch in height, also an inch in reach, 67 to 66. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Andre Lima, love watching him fight, man. 26 years young from Brazil. Of his 10 wins, 5 knockouts. And he is, of course, the fighter who in his UFC debut was bit. That Igor Severino, can you freaking believe that? I honestly can't. Now, I will say his last 2 fights, close. Close against Mitch Raposo and Felipe Dos Santos, but he's still undefeated. He's still kicking it, and he got bit, and he made the bite mark into a tattoo. You can't get much better than that. You really can't. You really can't get much better than that. So, Andre Lima, young, hungry, up-and-comer in the flyweight division. You love to see it. And the winner of this, hey, you could always get a little Kai Sakura. I don't know. Maybe a little lower-ranked flyweight can always happen. Daniel Berez, his opponent, 36 years old, so a 10-year age discrepancy here. He is from Spain and has 13 finishes and 17 wins, 7 knockouts, 6 subs. And then, 3 of his 6 losses have came by submission. UFC debut in 2023, submitted in round 1, had 1 fight last year, beat Victor Altamirano by unanimous decision. Look, I already had this one in mind. Decision win for Andre Lima. His skill set has impressed me much more than Daniel Berez has. And plus, I'm just a fan of Andre Lima. So yes, this is a biased prediction. If Daniel Berez wins, I'll let you just go. Are you freaking kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me, Andre? That's exactly where I'll go. My 310 favorite, too. You know, I know I'm picking underdogs in the women's fights, but I mean, come on. Come on here. Back in the women's division again. Last time of the night, though. Fingers crossed. Stephanie Rondinha Luciano takes on Sam Page Hughes. Stephanie, 6-1-1, -260 favorite. Sam Hughes, 9-6, the +210 underdog. 5'6", 5'5", Stephanie has 1 inch in height and 1 inch in reach. 65-64, orthodox stance for both of these ladies. Sam Hughes, coming into this one. We'll start with her, 32 years old from Washington, has 5 finishes in her 9 wins, 2 knockouts, and 3 subs. Of her 6 losses, she's been knocked out and submitted once. So far in the UFC, she's gone 4-4, about as even as you can be. All of them but one coming by decision, where actually one she got injured after round number 1, and actually another one she got TKO in round number 2. But in 2023, had 1 win over Jacqueline Amorim. Last year, decision loss to Jasmine Jeraguay, and a decision win over Victoria Dudikova. If anyone remembers that, is that the one where Victoria Dudikova shoved her coach when she lost? Oh no, that was the Fatima Klein loss. That's what that one was, but Victoria Dudikova, long gone. Sam Hughes still kicking it. Can't lie. She's that Elise Reed. She's that. Who won the other weekend? That was super boring. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Oh my gosh. What was her name? Was that at UFC 3? No, that was on, I think that was at Seattle, wasn't it? Oh, it was JJ Aldrich. I mean, I'm not trying to be mean, but just typical decision machines here. That's kind of what Sam Hughes is to me. Her opponent, Stephanie Luciano, 25 years younger, so younger, also 7 years younger at 25, from Brazil on a 3-fight winning streak. She actually has 2 KOs and her 6 wins. Had a draw in her Damas Contreras series debut, and then in her UFC debut, beat Talita Allen Carr in August. Good stuff for Stephanie Luciano. I'm probably going to bite this. It's the same logic I had when I picked against JJ Aldrich. I'm not interested in Sam Hughes. I'm interested in Luciano. She's younger. She's hungrier. She doesn't have the finishes, though. But after seeing what she did to Talita Allen Carr, she landed some knockdowns, was able to defend some takedowns. I think Stephanie Luciano can do the same here and beat Sam Hughes by unanimous decision. That's a prediction. Take it to the bank. Take out a loan. Put your house on it. Actually, I wouldn't if I were you, but, you know, make that prediction. Men's division up next. Bantamweight Carlos Pequeño Vera back in action as he takes on the debuting Josias the KO Wizard Musasa. I mean, do I even need to go over the stats? I think we know who I'm picking. Carlos, 11-4. Josias, 8-0. 5'8 to 5'6. Josias has 2 inches in height and 5 inches in reach. Wow, 74-69 southpaw for Josias. Orthodox for Carlos Vera. Minus 625. This is your biggest favorite on the card. And at plus 455, one of the bigger underdogs we have on this card. Actually, is it the biggest? Actually, no. We actually have bigger odds in our next matchup. My bad. But Josias, 26 years young from the Dominican Republic of the Congo. Not to be confused with the Dominican Republic. This is the Dominican Republic of the Congo. This man has 8 wins, 7 of them by knockout. The only fight that he didn't have by a knockout was actually his Damas Contreras series fight in September, where he beat Otari Tanzaloni by unanimous split decision. Ooh, split decision. He got outstruck, but he used some grappling. Is Josias by fraud checked out? I was kind of high on him. Then I see these little wonky decision wins on the Contreras series, and I get kind of thrown off, but Josias still looking pretty exciting as he takes on the age Carlos Vera. That's right, an 11-year age gap. Born in Ecuador, but now trains in Virginia. The plus 455 underdog has 6 finishes and 11 wins, 1 knockout, 5 subs. And of his 4 losses, he's been submitted twice. He was coming from, I believe it was the last season of The Ultimate Fighter. Actually, I think it was the one before that. It was the, actually, I think he fought on, I honestly don't know. I don't watch The Ultimate Fighter anymore. But Carlos Vera has debuted against Rinya Nakamura last February, a year ago, and got controlled for 13 minutes of the 15-minute fight. So, didn't get to see much from Carlos. He also lost to Brad Katona on The Ultimate Fighter. I do know that for a fact. I don't know much, but I do know that. So, he's coming in this one, not the most momentum. Josias is younger. He's hungrier. If Carlos fraud checks him, I will be very surprised, but we're going to ride with Josias Masua. I mean, what is his actual name? Musasa. That's how you say it. It's, you know, we just keep bringing up the undefeated fighters, and they all can't lose, right? Right? If Carlos Vera beats Josias, now that would be biggest upset of the night by far. Despite what I'm about to tell you, as these are actually the biggest odds of the night, staying in the bantamweight division, as Su Young Yu, Jiu-Jitsu is his nickname, takes on AJ the Savage Cunningham. And Su Young Yu is minus 700 favorite. AJ at plus 500 is your underdog. Su Young Yu, 14-3, 2 no contests. He's good. AJ Cunningham, 11-4. 5'10 and 5'6. AJ has 4 inches in height and also 6 inches in reach. 71-65. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. AJ's got the size, though. That's what I'll say for this one. AJ does have the size. Let's not sleep on him with that. Soo Young-yu, 29 years young, from South Korea, currently riding a 3-fight winning streak, 8 finishes in 14 wins, 3 knockouts, 5 subs, and of his 3 losses, he's been knocked out once. Actually, was it submission? I can't recall. Fought in the last season of the road to the UFC, if you want to call it a season, picked up 2 wins there in China, dominated Bargong Giseli to a unanimous decision victory, did what he had to do on the feet, landed in takedowns when he needed to. Soo Young-yu is a big favorite in this one. Don't know much about him, though, except the fact he's a minus 700 favorite and is coming into the UFC from South Korea. His opponent, AJ Cunningham, 30 years old, from Arkansas. 8 finishes and 11 wins, 4 knockouts, 4 subs. And of his 4 losses, he's been knocked out twice. Actually had a fight booked in September against, I think it was Morgan Cherie for some reason, but that one was canceled. I don't know if he pulled out. I think he did pull out, because didn't Chepe Marisco step in? I can't recall, but AJ fought on season 7 of Damus Katera series, finished in round 2 by Steven Wynn, and then made his UFC debut in March on short notice against Ludwig Klein and got head kick knocked out. So if AJ is going to pick up a win, it's going to be against Soo Young-yu on this random Apex card, but minus 700, a name like Soo Young-yu, his nickname's Jiu-Jitsu, give me a little submission win here for Soo Young-yu. That's what we'll say. He has 5 subs. Let's make it 6. Let's make it 6, Soo Young-yu. I'll ride with you. You, as in me, will ride with you, as in you, Soo. I don't know what I'm saying, but yeah, these Apex cards really get screwy, especially when they have all these fights. Oh gosh, this might really screw up our predictions record for the year. Unless we predict them all correct, then I'd be an absolute wizard. After that, I don't know when the main card officially kicks off, if they're going to go with 5 or go with 6, but nonetheless, if it is 5 or 6, I'm assuming this will be the final prelim any which way, which it should be the co-main event. The booking for this makes no sense. This would be like, I don't know any good comparisons, but here you go. Heavyweight action as the number, where is he at now? The number 12 ranked heavyweight, Wilder Cortez Acosta, will be taking on the unranked Ryan Superman Spann. Salsa boy, Wilder Cortez Acosta, 12-1. Ryan Spann, 22-10, 6'5 to 6'4. Ryan was a tall light heavyweight. He has 1 inch in height. He also has 1 inch in reach, 79 and 78. Orthodox stance for both of these boys. Minus 175, Waldo is the favorite. Plus 140, Ryan is the underdog. Let's start with Waldo, guys. You know him, you love him, maybe you hate him, but 33 years old from the Dominican Republic, not the Congo, the Dominican Republic. He now trains out of Phoenix. 6 wins by finish of his 12 total wins, 5 knockouts, 1 sub. And actually had a fight booked in October against, I have no clue, I honestly cannot recall who Waldo had was booked against, but he was able to get a fight last May, also won in January. He's been a decision merchant. Decision merchant, don't be fooled by his knockout of Lucas Brzezik. This dude is a decision merchant. The Rebels Despange loss, win, was a loss for fans, let me say that. Grappled him through all 3 rounds, and Rebels couldn't do anything, and then Waldo couldn't do anything on the ground. It was really embarrassing to see. So Waldo, 5-1 in the UFC, all but one by decision. I can't be bothered with Waldo Cortez Acosta. You know, it's funny to think he's at number 12. If he were to take on anyone above him in the rankings, maybe save Tai Tuivasa, Marcin Tybura. Actually, no, I think Marcin runs through him. I'm not really picking him to beat anyone, so I'll be interested to see how he does in this one, as he takes on the former light heavyweight Ryan Spann. Ryan Spann, 33 years old from Texas, is the plus 140 underdog. 6 knockouts, 13 subs, 19 of 22 wins by finish. Gotta love it. Now, of 10 losses, 7 of them have came by finish, 4 by knockout, 3 by sub. So Ryan has only been to the judges' scorecard 6 times in his career of his total 32 professional bouts. Picked up a win over Ovin St. Preux in October, getting a round 1 guillotine choke. That was at heavyweight, but Ovin St. Preux is not an actual heavyweight. So this is where you're going to get a grasp of if Ryan Spann is capable of hanging with the light heavyweight. And the real heavyweights, not the light heavyweights. Ryan's been with the UFC since 2018. This dude is fun just about anybody. He's knocked out Rogério Nogueira. He submitted Devin Clark. Took Sam Alvey to a split decision, goofy enough. Almost knocked out Johnny Walker, dropped him 2 times in 2 minutes, and then got TKO'd. Funny enough, Might have retired Misha Sirkunov with a nasty TKO. He's been submitted by Anthony Smith, lost a terrible split decision to Anthony Smith. He's been submitted in a main event by Nikita Krylov. He damn near retired Dominic Reyes. He almost cranked the neck off of Ion Kudalaba. He's been knocked out by Bogdan Guskov, and he's also cranked the neck of Owen St. Preux so bad I thought he was going to snap his spine. This one's 50-50. Odds makers know it. It's almost more fun to pick Ryan Spann for this fight. I'll say that for starters. You know, Waldo's the safe pick, the heavyweight. He's got the size. He's got the grappling. But there's one thing you got to know with Ryan Spann fights is he never fights normal. Okay, he'll start strong, he'll get intense. I mean, even the Anthony Smith fight, I think those two just knew each other so well. Besides that fight, he's only, so since 2020, let me just say this, since 2020, I can even use since 2019, he's only been the distance twice. Once against Anthony Smith, once against Sam Alvey. And mind you, that was UFC 249, the first ever non-crowd card. I just want to add in that context there. So I don't know if Ryan's going to get the finish. I don't know if he's going to get knocked down in a minute, but I think it's fun to pick Ryan Spann for this one. I think he has the power and the submission, and also he hunts for finishes. Waldo does not hunt for finishes. Maybe we'll see a new Waldo Cortez Acosta in 2025, but as for the Waldo I've seen in 2023 and 2024, it's not the most appetizing. So we're going to ride with Ryan Superman Spann, and hopefully he'll be getting into the rankings, because it'd be fun to see him at heavyweight. And dude, if he wins this, he'd be ranked number 12, and give me him versus Tai Tuivasa. Give me him versus Derek Lewis. There's so many fun fights to do there. Next up, this one's either opening the main card or closing out the prelims. My money's on the main card. We're heading to the men's featherweight division as Sheng Wu Sting Choi back in action as he takes on Kevin El Chino Vallejos. Sheng Wu Choi 11-7, Kevin 14-1, 6'5'7", 5 inches in height for Sheng Wu Choi. Also has 6 inches in reach, 74-68. Orthodox stance for Sheng Wu Choi, switch for Kevin. Wow, the size is in favor of Sheng Wu Choi, but he's the plus 325 underdog as Kevin closes as the minus 450 favorite. I shouldn't say closes, he currently is. Kevin, 23 years young, from Argentina, 3-fight winning streak, 12 finishes in 14 wins, 10 knockouts, 2 subs. His only career loss is a unanimous decision loss to Gene Silva. And if you've seen Gene Silva in the last 2 years, oh my gosh, that is a scary, scary man. And Kevin, at 22 years old, took him the distance. Come on, that tells me all I need to know. Returned on last season of Dana White's Contender Series in 2024, finished this guy in 2.5 minutes, not even. Kevin is ready for the UFC, and I'm excited to see it, man. He's young, he's hungry, he's taking on a guy 9 years older than him in Sung Woo Sting Choi. Sung Woo, you know, I like the guy. I like him. 32 from South Korea, 6 knockouts and 11 wins. Now, of his 7 losses, 5 of them coming by finish, 3 by knockout, 2 by sub. Sung Woo's just ran to some interesting matchups. I mean, come on, debuts against Moldovar Evloff, that's tough. They then give him Alex Caceres, Josh Kuliaba, Michael Chisano, some tough opponents, but last time out in July, you know, after taking about a year break, Steve Garcia humbled him, knocked him out in a minute 30. I think Sung Woo Choi is sadly past his prime. I think Kevin's going to capitalize on this. I think Kevin's getting round one finish, and I think Kevin is going to be on his way to stardom long before you know it. Give me Kevin Vallejos all day. All I need to see is that he has 12 of his 14 wins by finish. His only loss is to Gene Silva, and he took Gene Silva the distance at 22 years old. I can't get over this kid. Give him to me. Following that, we move to the men's light heavyweight division as potentially the next big thing at light heavyweight and heavyweight. Dayar Nurgozahe. I don't know how you pronounce his name, but he's 10-0. He's coming in, and he is supposed to be the next big thing. Next big signing the UFC has made. Takes on Brenson the Gorilla Ribeiro. Brenson 16-7-1, no contest. Yeah, we've seen him fight numerous times. 6'3-6'2. Brenson's got an inch in height. Also an insane 7 inches in reach, 81-74. Wow. Southpaw for Dayar, orthodox for Brenson. I was unaware of that. Dayar coming in this one, -280. Brenson +220. Dayar Nurgozahe, 27 years old, from Kazakhstan. Boys with probably, I'm forgetting his name, Bekmad, who was my boy that was watching at Ignite Fights? Oh no, Bekmad Dermanzova, I'm butchering his name. Maybe even Hamzat, or not Hamzat, Shavkat Rakhmonov. You know, maybe they're all boys. over there in Kazakhstan. But Dyer, 6 knockouts, 2 subs, 8 of his 10 wins coming by finish. And he fought on my birthday in 2024, and he got a round 2 head kick knockout over Bartosz Krylov. So Dyer, welcome to the UFC. His debut has been a long time coming, and they finally found him an opponent to make his debut, and it's not too bad. It's an action-packed guy in Brenson Ribeiro. Brenson, 28 years old, from Brazil. 15 of his 16 wins by finish, 9 knockouts, 6 subs. Now, of his 7 losses, 5 have came by finish, including 3 by knockout. So, not the prettiest. Mind you, those losses, Zhang Mingyang and Magomed Luev, you know, interesting stuff there. For Brenson, picked up a win over Kyle Machado in November. Lackluster performance. Look, give me Dyer all day. I mean, if Dyer gets humbled, the UFC just really can't break anyone into the light heavyweight or heavyweight divisions. They're really doomed. Dyer, we'll see how he does. He's 10-0 coming from Kazakhstan. He's either going to be a big hit or a big bust. There is no in-between. I'm going with big hit, Dyer. Don't let me down. We need to give him about Dyer the Dinosaur, Nergoza Hay. Ooh, I think I just gave you a new nickname, and you can do a little, like, roar on the way to the octagon. Is that cringy? No, Dyer, you'll have to separate yourself. Moving up into the for-sure main card, bantamweight action, as, you know, former guy here in Damon Blackshear, Damon the Monster Blackshear, who was on the verge of the rankings, man. He almost did it in his last fight. He was so close in this one. He'll take on Cody the Renegade Gibson, though. Damon, 15-7-1, Cody, 22-10. Both men are 5'10", 72-inch reach compared to 71-inch reach for Damon. Switch stance for Damon Blackshear, and orthodox for Cody Gibson. Okay, it's Damon. I think it's Damon Blackshear, but I keep going Damon. I think it's Damon Blackshear. Whatever it is, Blackshear's the last name. And Blackshear's the -400 favorite. Cody's the +310 underdog. That's right. Damon Blackshear, coming to this one, 30 years old, from North Carolina. 12 finishes in 15 wins, 2 knockouts, and 10 subs. Not too bad. His only career loss by finish was in his July 2024 matchup against Montel Jackson, when he got knocked out in 18 seconds. And that was the fight I was referencing. Also had a fight against Mauro Batista in 2023. I just think this dude has drawn some tough competition. Had to fight Farid Bashrat. Had a draw against Yusuf Salal. Damon only fights tough opponents. Took on a guy in Cody Stammen at UFC Vegas 100. Submitted him in round number 1. Do want to add that. So he's coming off a win, a performance of the night, too. Damon, very action-packed. He is only the 4th twister submission in UFC history. Actually, it might be the 3rd. I think it went Korean Zombie, Bryce, and then Damon Blackshear. I think that's how it is. And he even knocked out Leon Lacerda in 2023. So, Damon, he's action-packed. He's hungry. And his only losses are to top-level guys. I mean, come on. Put some respect on his name. And here's a guy who definitely wants people to put respect on his name. Cody Gibson. Cody the Renegade Gibson, 37, from California. 12 finishes and 22 wins. 7 knockouts, 5 subs. Of his 10 losses, he's been submitted 4 times. Cody, 2-fight winning streak, got submission of Brian Kelleher in July, and a unanimous decision win over Chad Ellinger in November. Now, let me just say, 5 of 6 takedowns, 12.5 minutes control time, boring. Now, Cody, he's in his second stint in the UFC. You know, he actually had a stint from 2014 to 2015, where he went 1-3. All right, since 2023, though, he's gone 2-2, currently ran a 2-fight win streak. There's not many men you could have put in front of Damon Blackshear where I wasn't going to pick him. So Damon in this one, round 1 submission, give him to me. And Cody's never been one to be knocked out. He's been submitted if any time he's getting finished. And Damon loves to get submissions. So it's a match made in heaven, if you ask me. Amen. Praise Jesus. Final 3 fights of the evening. Like I said, the matchmakers are just, that makes no sense why they're matchmaking this way. In terms of actually who's fighting who, not too bad of a problem. I think it's the order of the matches. So the match order. What was it? The booker, whoever it is, whoever's organizing the way these cards are structured is ridiculous. Lightweight action, Alexander the Great Ape Hernandez, Kurt the Hurt Hollebaum, 3rd to last fight of the evening. What are we doing? Alexander, -190, Kurt +155. So 50-8 for Alexander. He's 5'9". Kurt, 22-8 with 1-0 contest, 5'11". Ooh, but the reach goes to Alexander, 72 inches at 70. Both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Alexander Hernandez, You know him. I mean, maybe you've come to love him. The 32-year-old is from San Antonio and has 8 finishes and 15 wins, 6 knockouts, 2 subs. Of his 8 losses, he's been finished 4 times, 3 of them by knockout. Hernandez came in the UFC, knocked out Benil Dariush in 42 seconds, then dominated Oliver Aubin Mercier. Everyone thought he was the next big thing, and then Dolan Cowboy Cerrone humbles him. Then comes back in 2019, beats a Francisco Trinaldo in one of the most boring fights I've heard of. Then Drew Dober knocks him out. Then he gets a knockout. Then Thiago Moises beats him. Then he gets another knockout. Then Anao Moicano destroys him. Then Billy Quarantillo TKOs him. Then he beats Jim Miller, though. Then he loses to Belgio. Then he almost beats Damon Jackson. Bad split decision. He then gets a close split decision in October of last year against Austin Hubbard. So he's coming off a win. This dude is just, he hasn't really altered his game plan, honestly, in the, what is it now, 7 years he's been in the UFC, but hey, it's 2025, always time to change. He takes on the seasoned Curt Hallebaugh, 38 years old, 6 years older from Louisiana, 7 knockouts and 10 subs, 17 of 22 wins by finish. Of his 8 losses, he's been finished twice, once by a knockout and once by a submission. Curt, coming off a win over Kanan Kariski in July, suffered a loss to Trey Ogden in March, so 1-1 isn't too bad. Won the Ultimate Fighter in 2023, good for him, beat Austin Hubbard with a triangle choke. Before that, he had a stint in the UFC from 2013 to 2018, where he managed to pick up 0 wins, 5 losses, and 1 no contest. So, not the best look for Curt Hallebaugh. I mean, I'm going with a decision win for Alexander Hernandez. Curt Hallebaugh is just, I'm so confused how he's even won 2 UFC fights. Like Austin Hubbard, you really have to be beat up. And Kanan Kariski is just not that talented. I think Hernandez still has what it takes. I don't know if he's going to make a run at lightweight in terms of a championship, but if he's got a win coming off, he's coming off a win, is what I'm trying to say. He can pick up a win over Curt Hallebaugh, and it's so doable. It's just if he can execute, that's a whole different story. Welterweight action is the co-main event as Chidi Bang Bang and Chukani takes on Elizio Capoeira Zaleski dos Santos. Elizio Zaleski -180, Chidi +150 is the underdog. Then Chukani is 24-10 with a no contest. Elizio 25-8-1, 6'3" to 5'11". What is that? 4 inches in height for Chidi. Also has 7 inches in reach, 80-73 orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Let's actually start with Elizio Zaleski dos Santos for this one. Coming in here, guys, 38 years old from Brazil. 18 finishes of 25 wins. He's got 15 knockouts and 3 subs. Of his 8 losses, he's been finished 3 times, twice by knockout, 1 by sub. Elizio, been in the UFC for a decade now. He's fought Nurmagomedov, Medoff, Max Griffin, holds a knockout win over Sean Strickland. He's fought Li Jingliang, Muslim Salikov. He holds a win over Benoit Saint-Denis. It was a draw. Wow. And last year went 1-1. Lost to Randy Brown by decision and knocked out Zachary Scrogan in a minute 15. That was a tough loss. Okay, Zachary Scrogan took that on short notice. Never should have been in there with Elizio, and Elizio absolutely destroyed him. But don't be confused when Elizio's destroying this kid. Would he have 7 pro fights before this or something? You know, let's cut him some slack, because I think he's in for a tough night when he takes on Chidi in Chukane. Chidi, 36 years old from Las Vegas, 15 wins of his 24 wins coming by finish, 14 knockouts and 1 sub. Now, of his 10 losses, he's been finished 8 times, 5 of them by knockout. That's something to keep in mind. Now, Chidi is an interesting run in the UFC. Kicks off it with a Damus Katerra series win, then a 16-second knockout of Marc-Andre Barut, then a round 1 knockout of Dusko Todorovic, then almost has had one of the craziest fights I've seen against Gregory Rodriguez. Comeback of the year in 2022 for Gregory Rodriguez. It was crazy. Dud of a fight against Albert Durov in 2023, gets finished in round 1 by Michael Lukajsic. Then 2024 drops down to welterweight, puts on 2 boring decisions, but got the job done, is what I'll say, you know. So, win over Rhys McKee, win over Jared Gooden, last fought in October, did what he had to do. 105 7 strikes to 20, got taken down twice, not too bad. For this one, I'm seeing a stand-up affair between Elizio and Chidi. The one reason I'm probably going to pick Chidi is just because he is a underdog, and if you're making bets, this is one to make a bet on. He's got the reach. He's got the height. I will say Elizio probably has the experience more at welterweight. You know, I will say Chidi spent a year at welterweight, but didn't take on anywhere near the level of competition that Elizio did. But for Elizio, I mean, here's a guy who will go out, have a draw against Renat Fakhretdinov, and then drop a boring decision to Randy Brown. So, you never know what you're going to get with Elizio. I'm going to go with Chidi. I could easily be wrong. It's an Apex card. I could really care less. To be honest, I could really care less. I could go 0-12 on this for predictions. I honestly wouldn't care. So, could go with Chidi. Might even shock with a little show, round 2 TKO or something. Oh, no. Got to spice it up. But now, I mean, it's almost felt like a chore getting to this point. I hope you've been somewhat entertained. Here's your main event prediction, guys, as we have Marvin Vittori back in action. Oh, my gosh, the Italian Dream takes on Roman Dolidze, the number 8 and number 12 middleweights on the planet. Didn't know where they had Roman at the moment. Marvin, 19-7-1, Roman, 14-3, 6'2" to 6'0". Roman has 2 inches in height and 2 inches in reach, 76-74. Southpaw with the left for Marvin, orthodox with the right for Roman Dolidze. Interestingly enough, Marvin -140 is the favorite, +120. Roman is a very soft underdog. These two are about as even as they get. Marvin Vittori, 31 now. 31, man. Last time he fought, he wasn't even in his 30s. He was 29. From Italy, as we all know, but I think he trains maybe in Las Vegas or something. I know he's training in the U.S. now. 2 knockouts and 9 subs, 11 of his 19 wins by finish, and he's never been finished. Of his 7 losses in 1 round, never been finished. He did have a fight booked against Brendan Allen in April of last year, April 6th. That was when Chris Curtis stepped in. My favorite Apex fight of last year, besides Neil Magny and Carlos Protest, that is. But Marvin, last time he did fight, June 2023, fight of the night, one of the best fights of 2023 against Jared Cannonier. I mean, this dude's never been knocked down. I just want to add that in. Marvin Vittori is such a dog. He's fought in Israel Adesanya, Robert Whittaker. He actually holds a win over Roman Dolidze. Outstruck him 106-71 in March of 2023. Do you want to throw that out there? Has a performance of the night, 5-round win over Paulo Costa, beating Kevin Holland, beating Jack Hermanson. As far as finishes go, he's got 2. 1 in 2016 and 1 in 2020. So he really is a decision machine. He's famous for wearing his trunks backwards at a cover photo shoot for one of his fights. Marvin Vittori is an absolute riot, and I love him as a fighter. He's one of my favorite fighters. I can't lie. I don't know what it is about him. It's Italian roots. It's just his swagger. Maybe it's the fact he's so cocky and confident, and even when he puts I don't forget, Adesanya pretty much 5-0'd him. Maybe he dropped 1 round, and Vittori gets up, and he's going, what do you mean? You didn't win. I won. And he was being serious. It was so funny. His opponent, Roman Dolidze, 36 years old, is 5 years older from Georgia, 11 finishes in his 14 wins, 8 knockouts, and 3 subs. And also, in his 3 losses, he's never been finished. Good to know. Roman, been with the UFC now 5 years, and I know it's been hit or miss. 2-fight win streak, drops one to Trevin Giles. 4-fight win streak, including 3 finishes, drops one to Vittori, then drops one to Imavov. But then, little 2-fight win streak. Beat Anthony Smith in June, beat Kevin Holland in October. You know, not necessarily entertaining at all, but Roman Dolidze coming in with some wins. From what I saw in that Marvin Vittori fight, I mean, it leaves little to be desired for a rematch. If anything, I would have loved to have seen maybe Marvin Vittori take on, who could I think of? Marvin Vittori versus maybe, probably Bo Nickel, honestly, would have been entertaining. And we could have had Roman Dolidze be fighting, gosh, I don't even know, Roman Kopilov? I don't even know, guys. I don't have guesses, but these two are fighting each other. We're getting the rematch. Look at the first fight. It was pretty straightforward. Just Marvin Vittori outstriking him every single round, barely. Roman maybe looking like he got a couple better of the exchanges with them harder hits. You don't really know. For me, for this one, 5 rounds favors Marvin Vittori. You know, Dolidze didn't necessarily fade in that Imavov 5-rounder, but he didn't look better as the fight went on. He certainly didn't get better. He dropped rounds 4 and 5, so that's something to take note of. So we are picking Marvin Vittori to win by unanimous decision. It would be fun to throw in a little submission bet or something, even a knockout bet, but I don't know if you're going to get that Marvin Vittori. I always do notice when they mention that neither of these guys have been finished, they're probably itching for one of them to get a finish, and that's usually how karma works out, or however you want to view it, but I don't know. I'm hoping it's entertaining. I'm hoping it's good. Do I expect a lot? No. I don't expect a lot, but when you have one, actually, let's count out how many fights we have, because as I've gone through this, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 fights in an empty arena. You mean, you just got to hope they're entertaining. So there could be some hidden gems on here. If you're asking me, you may have some future stars in Eunice DeBuin, in Andre Lima, Stephanie Luciano, Su Young Yu, Josias Musasu, Kevin Vallejos, Dyer Nergose, Damon Blackshear, kind of is already up there. And as for the winner of this, does it really move the needle for their career? Not really. The winner will be ranked number 8. They will be looking up for a next matchup, but who will that next matchup be? Tough to say. So that's where we're going to go with Marvin Vettori. Decision win through the striking. Take it to the bank. Right on about it. And that's what we're going with. But guys, those are our UFC Vegas 104 predictions. Also our thoughts on UFC 313. Boys, go tell someone you love them today. Go do a good deed for a stranger. And remember, no matter what bad thing you've done in your life, if you turn to the Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, you can be forgiven. That's right. A little bit of a biblical stuff for you to end today's episode. Always got to sprinkle in something spontaneous, as this is the Surprise Jab Podcast. When we're back, guys, we'll be back to our normal episode format, doing all sorts of funky things. I mean, I got UFC until the freaking end of April. I'm in no worries of content to make for this. And also, it's going to be getting into WrestleMania time. Some of my buddies want to come on as special guests. We got a lot of fun stuff cooking, boys. So that's all we got for now. You guys have a great time. And as always, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.